for a WeChat workout. WeChat. Go to the Cliff Central account. Tap connect. Then message to show.
Unreal. Uncensored. Unradio.
CliffCentral.com.
Ooh, what does this button do?
Please, do not push the button. You have no idea what it
is. What the? Talking Tech. With the techie guy, you are here on CliffCentral.com.
Well, welcome to another episode of Talking Tech, now on CliffCentral.com, the show which makes technology so easy to understand that everybody who uses technology should know exactly what's going on. And today on the show, we have got an amazing guest. If you've ever been on an adventure, or if he ever phones you up to go on an adventure, just say no. What am I talking about? Well, we've got Rian Munzer, who's going to be telling us all about how he, I don't know, got onto his bike and decided to cycle around Africa, as one does. But that's coming up straight after soon. But we've got Tanya Kowalski in studio with me, just trying to make this technology so much easier so everybody can understand. Hello, Tanz.
Hi. I thought you were introducing me as the amazing guest.
You are the amazing
guest. I got
quite
excited. Yeah.
Did you get up on your bike?
And then I just heard bicycle, and I knew that wasn't me.
And we all know people who cycle, and if you have to hear about mile rate per hour, the vomit.
As a runner, you know, I've got a thing about cyclists
as they do about
runners. We don't really like each other.
Do you like flash each other? Not flash, I mean like wave at each other when you
run? No, never. And that's my irritation. Cyclists do not greet runners. And in fact, when they do, we kind of joke and say, well, that's obviously a runner on a bike who's greeting us. And then they take over the road. But, you know, they have the same issues about us. So
I sense a bit of hostility there.
Only a little bit.
Only a tad. Okay. No, fair enough. So it's not you on a bike. Okay.
Just to be clear.
Okay, you just do this road thing. All right, fine. So we got Rian coming up, and you know when I kind of first heard Rian speak, he was telling us the story about how he got held captive in some African country for days on end, and then how he never thought he'll make it home. But you know, as one does, he managed to get through it. His girlfriend at that stage said, "Let's go to New York." The rest of us would get onto a plane. He decided, let's take a boat and row themselves to New York, as one does. And I want to hear about all this cool tech that he's got, especially you know, since he started his adventures in 2002. That must have been some bit of kit that he carried with him. How's that changed over time? We're going to find all that out after the break. But in the meantime, one thing that's very, very cool, speaking of adventure and travel, is one thing we all do is take snaps with our phones, right?
Mm-hmm.
You know, we want to take photos, we want to share them to all social media. And the one thing that I was been following recently is the whole iPhonography kind of movement that's sprouted up. And we did a little ride with the guys from Core and taking photos and going to all these historical sites around Johannesburg. And that's actually been quite cool and quite a bit of an eye-opener. So what's this all iPhonography all about for those of you who don't know?
So iPhonography South Africa is a competition. It's now in its fifth year, and it's run by iStore. And it's a competition for people who take pictures with their iPhones. And that could be anyone. It doesn't have to be a professional photographer. I think last year there was a 14-year-old winner who took an amazing portrait picture. And entries have now opened. And basically the competition is asking anyone to enter whatever pictures they have taken with an iPhone.
Not an iPad. Please tell me not. Do you still get people who what is up with those people who take photos with a tablet?
I don't know. Maybe they have other, like, less adequate phones in their pockets.
Oh, so that tablet takes a better picture.
But I saw something even better. A couple of weeks ago at my son's sports day, I saw someone taking a video with their iPad and running from the start line to the finish line
stop.
It was possibly the worst instance. I mean, but you have to credit their, you know, their loyalty as parents and
run, Fricky,
carrying
run.
Around with a tablet.
Okay.
I thought that was quite impressive.
All right. So officially you can take a photo with your tablet as well.
It's iPhone.
Okay.
But I guess if someone did take a picture with their iPad,
It should be okay.
Yeah, the metadata wouldn't say that it's taken from a Nikon or a Canon.
Right. Because I mean, do they check for this kind of stuff?
Yeah, absolutely. So if you want to enter with your DSLR, but it's strictly an iPhone entry. Only we'll know.
We'll
pick that up. And obviously every entry is checked like that.
And then are there different categories that you can enter your stuff
into? Yeah, so the five categories, there's abstract, still life, scenery, portrait, and My South Africa. Anyone can enter up to five entries.
All right, what happened to the My Selfie category?
Selfie was big last year.
Yeah.
But I guess the organizers thought, let's make it, something less selfie and more encompassing of South Africa. So
okay,
My
nice.
South Africa, which has various interpretations, My South Africa
could be
your house, your.
So if you're that into your selfie, you can still take a selfie on top of your kaya saying, hey, check me out.
Yeah, exactly. Or you can create an abstract selfie or a still life selfie or scenery selfie.
Or just don't do that at all and move on, right?
No, look, I mean, everyone is encouraged to enter whatever they have.
And how much does it cost to enter?
It's free to enter.
Okay.
A lot of people say to me, oh, I'm not a photographer, I'm not an Instagrammer, I don't have 50,000 followers on Instagram.
Yeah.
And, that's the beauty of it. A good phone can allow you to be a photographer, and you can tell multiple stories with your phone. Everyone is a photographer. If you take a picture, whether it's a selfie or of your coffee or of your dog, you're a photographer. You're an iPhonographer. So enter.
I must tell you, when I did that little ride to kind of go all over town and take snaps of those photos, the camera's incredible on that iPhone 6. I use the 6 Plus. Really, really good camera, snaps really, really good photos. And a lot of it's got to do with your eye, I suppose. So I think the idea is that if you just take a photo head on, you're always going to get the same type of image. But if you bend down, step up, I know I find that when you're kind of focusing, don't put the subject always in the middle and put a little bit to the left, a little bit to the right, play with the images, you actually get a very, very nice visual effect.
Yeah, it's just about changing a perspective, as you said,
perfect.
Or changing an angle. So, entries are at www.myeyestore.co.za or myeyestore.co.za/iPhonography.
And is iPhonography a South African thing only?
No, it's a global term used to describe
people taking pictures.
People taking pictures with their iPhones. But iPhonography in South Africa refers to the competition. So, everyone's a photographer.
Sure.
And submit your entries. They're amazing. Prizes, you could win tablets, you could win phones.
Oh, real stuff.
So
we expect everybody to snap away and get in there.
Yes, Leron, you can even borrow my iPhone.
I'm going to have to.
And you can take pictures of your coffee, of Cliff Central Studio, and you can enter them.
Okay, so there we go.
You've got a story to tell, as does everyone.
Okay, nice. But the nice thing is that your camera's in your pocket the whole time. And they say the best camera is the one that you have with you. And if you're carrying the iPhone, you basically have a great camera to snap away at whatever
absolutely.
You need to do.
Yeah.
Are you guys entering? Well, if you are, let us know. Our Twitter ID is at cliffcentral.com. You can get a hold of us on WeChat with the ID Cliff Central. My Twitter account is at Leron_SEGEV. Or Tanya. Tanya, what is your Twitter handle?
It's Tanya Kovarsky. TanyaKovarsky.
All right. Now, someone who's not a stranger to taking photos from basically situations that we'll never encounter, or most of us will never encounter at least, it's Rian, and we're going to get Rian on the phone right now. Rian, you there?
Yeah, how's it?
How's it? Rian, welcome to the show.
Good, thank you. Thanks for having me.
Excellent. Thank you for being here. Where in the world are you? Let's start with that question, because people want to know.
I just got back from London yesterday.
Sure.
You guys have to start. You started at the office. I start mine in Betty's Bay, so it's not a bad start.
Okay. I mean, it's a bit of a change from London, right?
Very much. Listen, Cape Town's actually a little bit colder than London. We had an awesome week of weather there last week, so I'm just traveling to that city, just amazing with sunshine.
And they say global warming doesn't happen, right? Yeah, okay, perfect. So, I mean, Rian, it's nice to have you in South Africa for a change, which is also quite cool. I always say, if you ever phone to say, hey, do you want to come on a quick holiday with me? The answer should always be no, because there's always a terms and conditions apply here. So I think, start us off. I mean, your first adventure was the whole, I'm just going to get on my bike and just take a little trip. How did that all begin?
Yeah. It's amazing thinking back to that. It was about 14 years ago. And I'd actually gone for a run in Newlands Forest. And amazingly enough, there I'm sitting and I'm just telling myself how good life is. I've got a pretty girlfriend, got money in the bank, got a good job. but I wasn't happy, and I could feel it like in my gut that things weren't 100%. And, as simple as that, 20 seconds. It was a 20-second decision. I told myself, either you're in or you're out. And I made the decision right there and then. And that was the start of a career that, hey, listen, I didn't know it would end up like it is where it is now. I didn't know I'd be writing books, speaking across the world, and speaking on subjects that I really, really am interested in, from leadership to governance to technology. I'm loving it, absolutely loving it.
So, I mean, take us back. When you were getting on that bicycle and setting off onto this little adventure, from a tech point of view, what did you pack with you? What did you think that you absolutely will need on this little journey of yours?
Sure, Laurent. You know, amazingly enough, I can tell you my naivety really, really was something that was a big bonus for me when I left. I didn't have much money. I didn't have any sponsors or any support, or people even thought what I was doing was good. So you can just scratch off the list. I couldn't sit in front of people and say, hey, listen, would you sponsor me?
Exactly.
Would you sponsor me this? People weren't listening to me. And, I mean, I literally just took my watch. I didn't even have a camera, not even a little clickety-click camera. I had nothing on that Africa trip. Winterglager obviously came on board, and people know them for the guys who supported me on that bicycle trip. I bought a video camera with that money that I got. The video camera cost me R6,500.
Sure.
I thought it was a serious piece of technology because it was using 3 CCD footage and auto shooting that.
Sure.
And the guys told me it's the best that you could put on TV. But at the end of that journey, 2 years later, that footage guys don't even want to play on HD screen.
100%. Sure. And it was an expensive piece of kit.
It was. Man, I can remember taking that money, and I just phoned Fusty back home, and I was standing in Winterthur, and I was at the big shopping center there, and I was, having to make this big decision, the first big one that I had to say to her, listen, we've got this money, it's a big relief, but sorry, I'm going to spend it today on a video camera. So it's a little bit of a debate, but hey, man, you know what's amazing about that now is that I'm able to show people the footage of where I was from Namibia onwards. I've documented that. It's amazing. So I needed that technology to be able to tell my story today.
And Rion, did you have batteries? Did you charge the camera?
Yeah. It's Tanya, isn't it?
Yes, correct.
Tanya, hi. Yeah. Listen, I was naive again. So you guys can laugh at me now that I didn't. It looks like I didn't know what I was doing. But really, I didn't know what I was doing. I got a spare battery that I bought also with the camera. That I would charge anywhere I could find a generator or some power. So I managed to always keep the battery charged. The amazing thing is that I always shoot. So if you look at the footage I shot on that bicycle trip, you'll see that I was focused on only shooting for 15 to 20 seconds at a time. But that wasn't because I was trying to be all cinematic. Hey, listen, I was just doing to save battery. So even if it was like a prize-winning Oscar-winning moment, shucks, it was only 15 seconds because the battery would only allow that.
But Ian, fast forward a little bit. Now, you got back, your girlfriend said, welcome home, thanks for popping out for a bit of milk, and where the hell have you been for the last, that while?
2 years.
Then she said, well, payback time, take me to New York, and you decided, that's a great idea, but you're going to do it your way. Tell us about that, sir.
Now, we mustn't skip the two journeys in between. You know, I went around Madagascar after that. But you make
minor.
A joke about that. Yeah. So, Ron, I went, when I told Fusty I was going on this bicycle trip, obviously I had to pitch it to her, and I can remember it was about a week before I left on that bicycle journey.
Yeah.
Everybody was mocking me and ridiculing me, and I remember walking down this passageway in my house, and I could hear Fusty crying. And I walked up to her, and I said, hey, come on. I'm under a lot of pressure. What's wrong? You need to communicate with me. She stopped and she looked at me and she said to me, listen, if you are wanting to break up with me, there are better ways of doing it. And she thought the bicycle trip was that, but it wasn't. And essentially, I told her I'd be away a year. I promised her a year. And it landed up being 2 years. So when you joke about the bread and milk issue, goodness, you have no idea. If I go out, plus, he doesn't think it's going to be a five-minute trip.
A bit of trust issues there.
I
could recommend some good tracking devices so you have to keep a tabs on where you're at.
Yeah, I mean, listen, Madagascar and then Iceland in between, were monumental journeys in their own right. They were also world first. They were groundbreaking. We were, I was taking adventure and what people considered modern day adventure, and I think I was slowly turning it on its head and making people think that there's still modern day adventure out there.
Yeah, but I think
so when you talk about
But that's exactly, I mean, that's what I do want to get back to the, to this point, because it's, you know, when people say adventure, you think, it's all been done. And you kind of, you just write it off and then you move on. But somehow you manage to find the items which are so doable, in inverted commas, mm-hmm. clearly. But I mean, you got into a kayak and you said, well, nobody's done it, so I'm going to.
Yeah. I was a bit nervous on that. It's so much easier for me to speak about leadership now when I stand in front of audiences and I'm standing in front of people that really have done it in business. And these are big heavyweights in the world of business. I speak with a lot more confidence now. Laurent, I failed in many aspects. I failed on personal levels, on many, many aspects. But I've never, ever, ever gone back on saying what I was going to do. I didn't do it. And that does take some stubbornness. It does take some hardkoppigness. And I mean, shucks, man, I had to be stubborn to be able to achieve these things. I don't get interviews on TV or radio and chat to people about what I've done because I did my best. It's because I got the job done. So when you talk about it, looking back now, amen, I'm more amazed than anybody else that I was able to get some of these things right, eh?
Well,
a
lot of the stuff is everybody fails. It's how you deal with it that kind of separates, I suppose, the winners from the losers. It's, do you not complete something and say, well, bugger this, I'm definitely going to give it another go? Or do you say, well, I tried and therefore nobody can blame me and then just sit on the sidelines?
I did often, I mean, from the Madagascar trip, I got super lonely. I ran out of money. I literally survived on catching fish, and I needed the fish to bite the Rapalas so that I could live and survive and then still do what I said I was going to do. Iceland just, it was, again, a long journey that I planned, you know, budgeting for financially, also just for 3 months. That landed up being 6 months in the worst winter in 63 years. So,
wow.
I mean, it's fast-paced, but I tell you what's the beauty of it is, you know why South Africans have taken to my stories and why my books and that type and my speaking has been relatively successful is because every South African has got that fast-paced in them, no matter what the guys take on.
Sure.
We're not willing to take second best day.
And that seems to be proven kind of around the world. You know, we used to joke, when I used to live in the UK, we used to joke a lot that any time you find anybody during lunch, the only people would answer were South Africans because we work through lunch. There's none of us taking an hour break. I mean, what's all that crap about? It is actually it. You got a job to do. You butt down and you just do the damn job. It's as simple as that. Yeah. Just get on with it, right?
Yeah. Fusty does this speech. You know, Fusty, obviously, you touched on it now. I took it to New York, but you know, Fusty is a determined girl, and it was just so amazing, you know, taking somebody with me again on a journey and then having them having a real insight on what it does to do a world first and a world only. But for her, when she stands in front of audiences, I get goosebumps when I just hear her say it. She ends her speech by saying, if you really think that patting somebody on the back and telling them they did their best when you know that they failed is good enough, You're misunderstanding the whole plot in life. The thing is, it's getting the job done.
Yeah, it's actually a disservice, because if you know you can do better, you should be get up and do it, damn it.
Yeah.
It's a little bit frustrating, right? When you know that you can see people are not performing at their top and they can actually do it, and they're letting this thing called fear get in the way of everything.
Wow.
It's irritating.
Wow, it is, especially if you're close to those people.
Yeah, especially if you're close to those people. So, I mean, she's got a title in her own right. The first woman, what was that title?
Yeah, Fusty was she was the only woman at the time who had rowed across an ocean that a woman from Africa. So, I mean, it's just mind-boggling to think that in history, the only woman who had ever rowed any ocean on the planet was Fusty. So, that history was she made when she landed in Bahamas. It's unbelievable. Obviously, the two of us combined, the only human beings who've ever rowed from Africa to North America. No other humans in history have ever, ever been able to do it.
Because when she said, take me to New York, I don't think that's exactly what she had in mind initially.
She didn't.
Listen, I mean, the fact is that you survived the test of time, and that's not that she waited for you for 2 years, is that you were stuck on a boat for 3 months, and both of you walked off that boat without one killing the other.
I must correct you. I must correct you. It's 4.5 months. Four and a half months.
No, that's
in that little box together.
How big was that little box?
So if you've seen pictures of people go onto the net and they just see the boat itself, you'll see that there's two cabins on either side. One is for storage. It's the smaller one. That's about 80 centimeters high, 1x5 and 1.5. The box that we would be able to sit in, make our food in, and then sleep in was 1.5 meters cubed. So 1.5 high and wide. We literally shoulder to shoulder. I don't know how close you guys are to each other there in the studio, but imagine sitting right alongside somebody, shoulder to shoulder, and then think of somebody that you like a lot, your wife or your husband, and imagine being with no other contact, no other human beings, no other influence. For 24 hours, you guys are forced to sit like that. We had that 4.5 months.
I think the only other place you get that is in prison, if I'm not mistaken, right?
I think prison's probably got a bit more space.
Oh, yeah, you got time in the yard, so I suppose there is time apart after all that. I mean, that's hardcore. So, I mean, how did you – I mean, so let's bring it back to tech. Where, you know, when you set up on that journey, now you're much wiser. I mean, you've done a whole bunch of missions. I call them missions. You call them adventures. These are CIA-grade missions. How – you know, you now know what you're in for, or you think you know what you're in for. You're ready to kit out. What is the items that you absolutely need to have when you go on a journey?
Geez, Laurent, firstly, just to put that into perspective, people say, what was the scariest moment of that journey? You know, 4.5 months in the sea, we went through the biggest, most scariest storms. I can tell you now, still the day, we climbed into the car and drove from Betty's Bay around to Fishhook to go and tell Fusty's dad that that I was going to take in a rowing boat to New York, which wasn't easy for me. One of the things that I did try and emphasize speaking to her dad was that we didn't hold back in any way on the technology that was available to us for safety reasons. So, yeah, no, we definitely, this time I took double of nearly everything. So we had the EPIRB, which is what most boats or big ships use. It's a tracking device that you activate should you be in trouble or in distress. That then sends a signal out to the club that you're registered with or the association you're registered with, and we registered with UK. They would then relay a message to the Americans if we were close to their shore. Those guys would then relay the message to one of the ships if they were in our vicinity to try and come and help us. So it's not just a matter of pulling a little beacon and then a helicopter flies in. Literally, it takes a little while. And then we just had the personal PLBs, which were the ones you can hang around your neck. We dreamed of having those on us permanently, but after the first day, they just got hung in the cabin. And
did you ever have to use them? You said you encountered bad storms. Did you have to use such devices?
No, we didn't do any. Listen, I'm stubborn, eh? I'm not going to just pull that cord. I'd pull out the life raft and throw Fusty on it if it meant that. But no, not at all. We didn't come close to it. We were capsized once, but savage capsized. 9 meter swells that the wave picked us up and threw us middle of the ocean while we were busy rowing. After that, it just woke us up to the brutality of a massive storm at sea. Our boat still weighed a ton, but even after that, we didn't even have the thought of pulling the EPIRB.
But it's run, as you said, is that even if you pull the cord, it's not like the movies where you go cut and next thing a helicopter flies above your head. The stuff takes time, right?
Yeah. Friends of ours had pulled their EPIRB. So I've always asked people, you know, how does this thing really work? Mm-hmm. What does it really do? And friends of ours got, they left Windhoek, got one day out to sea and on a yacht, and then the boat started taking water and they had to pull the EPIRB. It was 4 days later.
Oh,
4 days later. So I just think, come on, or Windhoek, which is, it's one day out to sea.
Sure.
The people could have easily fetched them. But Tanya asked a good question. You know, that stuff, I think when you have that type of equipment on and the technology we have today is very different from what even we used in Madagascar or in Iceland. It really is a consolation to know that should you need to do something to get help, you can do it, but it doesn't mean it's going to be immediate.
And your GPS technology, how did that work?
I didn't use GPS on the bicycle trip. There wasn't really good GPS available, but I didn't have the funding for it anyway. I saw it as a luxury. going around Madagascar and Iceland, hey, guys, I like to just keep it simple. People say, well done, how did you navigate? Only when it was very, very misty and stormy and did you not see the coastline. So to get around Madagascar, I kept the coastline on my left-hand side, and Iceland, exactly the opposite, kept the land on the right-hand side. You don't need GPS then, I think, my opinion. And then with the row, we had a plotter. So we used the Raymarine plotters that you find on big ships, and it was amazing to be able to actually see ship traffic that was coming towards you on the plotter. You could see where you were, how fast you were moving, and then be able to budget distance every single day and then budget the time when you hope to arrive at your destination.
Oh, okay. So, but I mean, isn't that a bit, I mean, that must have been insane, because you've got this, here you are, two of you, little rowing boat, kind of doing your thing, and you see on your plotter these massive ship, ocean container going yacht, you know, kind of heading your way. And you know, and as you know with these things, you can't, I mean, you might be able to turn quite quickly, but these guys cannot. Are they able to see you at all? I mean, you got some beacon that they could read your signal?
Wow, I said to Fosu, the first place where we, where I just said, this is crazy, just when it came to ship traffic, was the eastern side of Lanzarote, Canary Islands. So it's in between Africa, so you'd get the Mauritanian coast. That is a little channel that the ship traffic all just piles into. So it's quite broad, 100 kilometers broad, but still, it felt like we were camping on a freeway.
Wow.
Our little boat drifting around, we would wake up at night, and if I set my alarm for every hour, but sometimes between those hours, we could just hear the drone of the massive, massive engines. That was okay. The ships could see us. I think a lot of them said they weren't able to spot us. But, Laurent, without a doubt, the scariest of scariest moments was just off Atlantic City on the east coast of the United States, where we were getting towards New York, and the ship traffic was... It was manic. We were absolutely getting thrown around just by sometimes ship traffic in their wakes of huge, huge oil tankers passing us. 2:30 in the morning, this massive ship, I could see it was a Russian oil tanker. Its name is Krasnodar, so you can Google that and see what the ship looks like. Pitch dark, couldn't see much. I called him on the radio, just letting him know what our position was. He was about 10 miles away. Wow, 5 miles away, he was heading dead straight on us.
Yeah.
I got a bit nervous. Fusty was still sleeping. About 2 miles away, I just started shaking Fusty, waking her up, getting her EPIRB around her neck and getting her life jacket on. And then as I jumped out to go and just see exactly where the ship was, we could suddenly feel the drone of those engines shaking the boat inside. I jumped out, and when I jumped outside, the tanker was busy passing us, and I could see the bolts of the panels, the metal panels, right alongside us. It was about 20 meters alongside us. So that's the closest we came to that 300-meter oil tanker running over us.
But, I mean, that's almost a head-on collision. I mean, they wouldn't have even felt a bump.
No, he didn't. He went past us. I actually did speak to him on the radio, but he told me it's too misty. Listen, I have to be honest. I really believe that guy, he had a thick Russian accent.
Right.
And when he was telling us he's going to change direction only in 40 minutes, I remember thinking, this guy's drunk and I can't communicate with him. I really think that he did have a few drinks that night.
Well, as one does when you're trying to head towards the States, knowing those immigrations are coming up around the corner. Stay with us just after the break. We're going to carry on talking to Riyad Mansour, who's going to tell us all about the cool and amazing tech that he used on his cool and amazing journey. Stand by for this.
I am the future of South Africa. On my shoulders, I carry the hopes and dreams of generations to come. I'm eager to learn, but even more eager to use my knowledge for good. I know that it's not where I come from, but where I'm going to that really matters.
At Sibanye-Gold, we believe our youth is worth its weight in gold, which is why we are so committed to developing, nurturing, and grooming our young people into future leaders. Sibanye-Gold, we are one.
All right, welcome back to Talking Tech on Cliff Central. And in studio, we got Tanya Kowalski, and on the line, we got Riyad Mansour. Riyad, still with us?
Yes.
Okay.
I'm ready, Leonard.
I'm just making sure you haven't planned another trip in the meantime. Maybe. What is your next trip before we get back onto the subject?
Man, just the exciting this year is that I think I'm back to where I was, sitting in that forest and making big decisions. So Sure, I think we've got opportunity to take adventure, I think, more mainstream. And
what's your definition of more mainstream? Because I'm a bit worried here.
I think you know, when people pander to this whole adrenaline, people call it adrenaline, it's just actually trying to just appease yourself or to settle this desire for something, to go see places. So people, I think, find travel exciting, but people are trying to even up that ante. So I think there is an opportunity to give people, the people who sit behind desks 9 to 5, Monday to Friday, that opportunity to do adventure. Obviously, a little bit more organized, a little bit safer, ticking a few boxes.
I must say, there's a very big appeal, because there's a lot of people who are in the rut, who will do the Monday to Friday, they'll come in the morning, they'll go at night, they'll do work over the weekend, and it's kind of rinse and repeat, and do it again and again and again. So things like a two-day trip down the Orange River on a kayak, for example, is so foreign, but it's safe, it's manageable, anybody can basically do it, but it's going to take you out of your comfort zone just for those 2 days. But those 2 days are enough to shake you up and say, what the hell are you doing? Are you happy where you're at?
Yeah, Leroy, you know, the guys, people are sitting, and I say guys, but I think women also, sitting with cupboards full of technology at home, and they never ever use it. They got the gadget.
Sure.
I mean, the bicycle computers, if you've just seen what bicycle computers can do, the joke that you could launch a spaceship with one of them 20 years ago is not far from the truth.
Sure.
So people aren't using these things. I think they can get out there. And listen, getting around the world to the most exotic of places is not difficult. Absolutely not difficult. A friend of mine, amazingly, I just got back from my Iceland trip. I did some work. She's actually the marketing manager for Vital Health Foods. And she was having a birthday coming up. I won't say what birthday it was. She'll kill me. But she had, it was a big one, and she had a birthday party with her friends. I think it was the Friday. The birthday was on the Wednesday the following week. She called me from Iceland to say, hey, here I am. I decided just to get on a plane, fly to Iceland, and spend my birthday over here.
Wow.
So, and then she did the most amazing things in Iceland, and obviously using our trip as a reference. And I was just blown away. That's inspirational.
But it's just doable. I mean, you know, when you look up, I think a lot of people have got these goals, and they just remain goals. And you're thinking, you know, there's a great author called Tim Ferriss, which wrote The 4-Hour Work Week, which is my Bible. Tanya laughs because she knows. It says, like, stop waiting for retirement, damn it. Because, you know, you take little retirements or little holidays as you go through your life, rather than waiting for this massive thing that might never, ever come. So get up. In Iceland, there's amazing stuff that you can do. You can be as organized or disorganized as you like, but you can actually do it. You just get up and do it, though. You just need to do
I think people are going to enjoy. I think Gareth is also speaking at the gathering, which is on Thursday, and it's an amazing just group of people that get together, speakers from South Africa, a lot of them politicians, a lot of them in the media.
Mm-hmm.
And I think people are going to enjoy my talk. I speak just before Julius Malema. And my theme is very simply, there's an ocean between saying and doing.
Yeah,
I think the guys in politics are going to love it. I think the guys in journalism are going to love it.
Sure.
We talk so much and we just don't do. So I hope that I'm going to entertain people on that day, but I think it's going to make people sit up and listen.
Well, as people should. And not just listen, but get up and do. And that's the key.
That's true.
So tell me something, when you've been on these amazing trips, you must have had some serious equipment failure. What is one that comes to mind that could have put your entire mission at risk?
Oh, no. We left Miami, and as we left Miami Harbor, we'd obviously taken water from the cities. We'd bought water and then used that as a ballast in our boat. We get into the Gulf Stream, which is our goal. So if anybody's ever been on that coastal area, you'll understand the phenomenon that the Gulf Stream is. So we didn't have a goal on checking equipment. We had a goal of, can we navigate in our little boat this monster river and flood in the open ocean? And we got into it. Second day, here we are, using some water. We want to just top up reserves in the evening or just before the sun sets. We start the water maker, and this huge burst. It sounded like something was exploding. And a valve had exploded right in the worst position that you could ever imagine, where I couldn't get to and repair. There we sat with only the 9 liters of water we had brought from Miami. And we still had a month left on this boat out in the ocean, and we were caught in the Gulf Stream.
Wow.
Yeah, I sat there, and I remember both of us and I were just quiet. Eh? We didn't say a word. We just sat there and we said, what do we do now? We're not giving up. So what do? We need water. We're not going to survive. We use about 7 liters a day. So we just had one day's rations left. And that was when you asked me equipment failure, without a doubt. That water maker, it's an incredible thing. You know, how it desalinates salt water to fresh water. It's incredible. But if it goes, you're finished.
So, what was the next step? What did you do?
What happened? The following morning, shucks, I remember I woke up early. It was still dark, and we were getting ready to start rowing. And both of us were just, it was hanging so heavily over us. I checked the plotter. There was very little traffic. It was South Carolina, very little traffic near us. And one ship came into the plotter screen. I called them immediately. The ship said that they would deviate their route and they would come towards us. I thought it was maybe just a 150-meter-long ship. It landed up being this 250-meter car transporter that came right alongside us. Only Fusty and I, this monster ship, 150 meters high. We could hardly see the people as they were lowering these crates down with water in.
Wow.
I was busy pushing the boatway while we were bashing against the side of this monster boat. And eventually they dropped down, I think it was about 56 liters of water down to us. And we took footage of that. If you see that footage, Laurent,
that's crazy.
You just didn't realize how small we were.
That's the whole thing, is that you don't, I mean, people who don't do the sea thing or the river or the water thing, they don't realize that you can't just stop, not like a road where you stop and that's where you stay. You know, if you're bobbing in that water, these currents, these waves, these awake, these all these things to contend with whilst you're trying to, it's a dangerous situation at the end of the day, trying to get information, trying to get some water down to that ship. And the thing is massive. I mean, 200, that's a big thing.
No, it's massive. Yeah, because, you know, for us also, we were lucky probably an hour after the ship had moved away from us. It was actually scary. As the boat was busy moving, it needed to put on those propellers and the side propellers. The monster propeller at the back, it felt like it was sucking us in underneath.
Mm.
And it's different being that close to one of those monster anchors.
Sure.
And shame. But what both us and I both laughed, we were stressing. If you see the footage of my face, it is red and I'm stressing. Fusty is picking up this water like a superhuman. And then they can see we're totally stressed. One of the guys shouts down with a loud hailer. And he's an Asian guy with a thick Asian accent. He shouts down, "Do you want to come on board?" So we didn't know what he meant by that. What the heck? What the hell are we going to do? Like, leave our boat here and come on board for a couple of tea. But
he's your neighbor, man.
Yeah. Listen, they were amazed. Absolutely.
Of course they were amazed.
Away. I don't know who was steering the ship. Everybody was on one side. I'm surprised the ship didn't fall over with everybody standing on one side. But, Laurent, it was, first thing, when that ship went away from us, we both said, frightening, but it would have been more frightening when we were starting to drink the last liter of water.
No, there's absolutely not even a question. I've got a quick question that's coming in on via Twitter. Amber wants to know, how are you charging your technology when you're out at sea? So, I mean, we all know the story that you can't get a full day's worth of charge out of your mobile phone these days. You're away for 4.5 months. Surely there must have been a way. Solar, what did you do?
Yeah, so it's nice to just compare from when I started in the Africa trip. I just used generators, and then I obviously bought spare batteries. So the idea was basic, but I had little technology then. On the Madagascar trip, I tried to go a little bit high-tech, I thought, and I got myself one of those solar blankets.
Yes.
It's roughly 70 meters long or 70 centimeters long and 50 wide. And those I would lay out on the sand or at the back of my kayak while I'm paddling. It would charge a small little motorbike-sized battery, and then I would use that with a converter to charge the 9-volt products that I had. But again, I only had a little satellite phone and I only had a little GPS on the Madagascar trip. For the Iceland and for the Take Me to New York journey, the technology we had, especially on the New York journey, we had solar panels. They were 94-watt solar panels, and the batteries we had in were monsters. They were that slow-releasing gel-type batteries.
Right.
And they also just powered our plotter, they powered our sat phone when we still had it before the capsized, and then most importantly, that water maker. It gave power to that 13 volts we needed to the water maker. And then, then converter again to 9 volts, that charged our smaller equipment.
Yeah, but obviously, I mean, the more batteries you carry, the more weight you've got to deal with, but some things are just, you just have to do. I mean, that was a deal breaker.
Yeah, what's amazing now is that you guys have seen, and you guys have probably reported on that guy that's flying the solar panel.
Yeah.
Now, with solar panels, obviously the batteries need to be charged, so it's a simple concept. Elon Musk is using the same technology, taking that the natural resource of wind and sun, and then charging batteries. So it's not a matter of us discovering now what resources we need to use, because we know that sun and wind is infinite. We now have to solve the problem of how we make these batteries more effective. And already in the last year, it is unbelievable. Any conference, any meeting or event you go to, in the goodie bag, there'll always be one of these portable little power chargers. That's where we're going. So, no, batteries, I think, are really coming right. People are putting the focus in the right areas now.
No, I mean, you made the mention of Elon Musk. I mean, he's launched this battery for the home now that $3,500, effectively allowing you to get off the grid completely, solar charging it, sold out instantly as he launched it. And he's looking to change the world. He's taking the same tech that he used in his cars and bringing it to the home. So I think that's going to be the way, because we can't keep on relying definitely in South Africa, relying on our wonderful infrastructure, which is crumbling. We've got to do our own thing, and solar is where it's at. But battery. Those who can solve that equation are going to rule the world.
Yes, Laurent, you speak about something. I did a lot of work for, I don't know if you remember, a company is very famous in South Africa. And they've closed their doors now. Optimal Energy, they were doing the battery-powered car, and they were leading the way. Obviously, government had sponsored them to a large degree, but it just they pulled the plug, and it's horrendous. I mean, we were on the cusp of changing things. That technology that they created has been sold on to the Musks of the world, where the credit should have gone to people like Optimal Energy. And without a doubt, technology. I still in Iceland when I was in Iceland with Dan, I said to him, "Listen, you know, we are doing something great here, but can you imagine the two guys?" The guys in this single little kayak 54 years before us, without all that technology, without all the fancy clothing and gear that that we're busy wearing right now, imagine what they had to go through. I think adventure in 20 years' time is going to be a different animal altogether.
I'm just a bit worried that in 20 years' time, the adventure is going to be somebody wired to a computer and virtual reality, and they'll think that's it. I hope he doesn't get there to you know, the famous thing is when mom says go play outside and you take your PlayStation outside. That's not what we had in mind, right?
Now, Laurent, you're sounding old now, man.
Oh, you have no idea, too. Listen, thank you very much for joining us. We're really looking forward to your next adventure. Please, you have to keep us posted.
Awesome.
Let us know what you're up to. We definitely want to keep tabs on where you're at.
I want to see what's in your bag. I want to see what you're taking with.
Yeah, well, we're gonna come send you off wherever you're off to.
Listen, guys, the boat the rowing boat, Tanya, and I think you're going to like this or appreciate this very much. The boat that we rowed to New York, and this is a piece of history, it goes on show now across the country. So it goes on a road show starting in Cape Town at Grand West, and then Sun International are moving it to all their properties. So it will land up in Sun City probably 3-4 months time. I would encourage you to go and take a look inside that boat and see literally how we live. You're going to be very, very impressed.
I would love to see that. Where can we follow details of that journey of the boat?
Do you know what? You can just at a million thrills, that's Sun International's tag on Twitter. If you can just send them a message and say, hey, listen, when will they go live? I know they're busy working hard on getting they want it to be impressive. As you know, that they do things on a big scale. I think they're working hard to make the presentation of the boat and where it's going to be super impressive.
And then obviously your website, people can find details. So what is your website address?
So it's rianmansa.com. But again, get me on Twitter, @rianmansa. I haven't gone complicated with these fancy names. Yeah, I've stuck to my name.
There's one thing you're keeping simple is your Twitter handle. Okay. Everything else seems to be a whole other ball game, right?
Awesome, guys. Thank
Fantastic.
You.
Thank you very much. I appreciate your time.
Cheers, Tanya. Thank
Cheers.
You.
Cheers. All the best.
Sure. Hey. So when you're next booking your little Mauritius adventure and you're going, oh, my God, I don't have enough USB chargers. Just think of people who sat in a boat for 4.5 months, shoulder to shoulder, and then realize that a month before their journey ends, they might not have enough water to make it. So I think if you've left your USB charger at home, it's okay. You'll survive, right? Oh, it's crazy, crazy stuff. All right, so Rian's story is always amazing. I mean, if you haven't heard him speak, please, you've got to find out when he's next speaking and get yourself onto that list. It's absolutely mind-blowing stuff.
Yeah, follow him on Twitter as well. It's Rian, it's RIANANMANSER. He's fab and so entertaining as well.
No, I mean, sure, we've had a pleasure of hearing him a couple of times, and it's always inspiring to hear. And as he said, there's a big ocean between saying that you want to do something and actually getting up and doing it. Unless you've got to sit in the forest when he goes to the forest, in which maybe you'll find inspiration over there. All right, so that was incredible. So other technology that's to do with transport. We've got a couple of minutes to quickly go through it. Tanya, you've been involved in something called Pickup. Are you picking people up? What's the story?
No, it's really, really not what you think. Okay. It's a new platform launched by WeChat. It's called Pickup, P-I-C-U-P. And you can follow them on WeChat, or you can add their account to your account. It's a brilliant concept. So, Leron, imagine you get to a studio, like now, you're here for an hour, and you know you've left your charger or your lunch or your cell phone at home.
Okay.
You don't necessarily have the time to go and fetch it. So Pickup is basically Uber, but that doesn't take you to a place. It brings something to you.
No.
So you can call the Pickup, or not call, you can input it in your phone, and you can ask them to go to your house by motorbike, bicycle, or car, and fetch whatever you need and bring it to you.
Oh, wow. Okay. So kids left school, tucked back at home.
Yes.
That kind of thing?
Yeah, so you're stuck at work or you're stuck in a meeting. You don't necessarily have the time or the inclination to go home to the school, drop off the school togs or the homework. You get Pickup to do it. Currently, it's only in Cape Town.
Okay.
They're set to launch in Joburg in about 2 or 3 months, which I'm really excited about.
Absolutely.
So it's everything. I mean, I once went to the airport and realized I'd left my baby's pram at home.
Not the baby.
Okay, fortunately, at least I ticked one thing right there.
Yeah.
So, I mean, from that point of view, I could have just got Pickup to, for me to get out of customs or the big mission. I just get Pickup to bring me the pram.
It's your personal butler.
Yeah, exactly.
What a win.
Yeah, it's
I think cost-wise, do we know?
Absolutely brilliant. Well, I think there is a base fee, and then you're charged per kilometre. Obviously, a bike will be cheaper than a car.
Sure.
And it's instant. So it's also, okay. I think it could solve a big courier problem. So say you're sick, I want to drop off groceries. I might not have time to drop them off at you, but I've got the time to shop.
Sure.
Get Pickup to come to me, collect the groceries and drop them off at you. Bunch of flowers, a last minute present. I mean, the options are endless.
Of all the mission of actually going out, finding parking, you have to drive there.
Yeah.
You need to go through e-toll, which you'll pay or not pay, depending on where you stand on this. But at the end of the day, there's still an expense to you. You don't realize it, but there's still an expense of time and money of you getting into your car and doing these things.
Yeah. Whereas so you're basically paying
somebody
for the luxury of time.
And that so is apparently,
I mean, they were telling me that someone had left their golf clubs at the golf course.
Yeah.
It cost them 600 Rand because it was far out. But for that person, 600 Rand could have meant an hour or 2 hours saved off their, their schedule.
Anything, absolutely.
I think it's genius. So, so that's Pickup, P-U-C-I-P, and you can find it on WeChat.
And it's available in Cape Town at the moment.
In Cape Town at the moment, but I'm pretty sure, it will be rolled out here shortly and hopefully other big centres as well.
I think as more people kind of use the service, they'll learn more. It's nice not being the first as well, because kind of let somebody else do the learning for a change.
They won't drop off people, because I've asked if they would drop off my son at soccer matches and the like. They won't do that.
Yet.
I'm interested to see what kind of weird requests people have with drop off and collection. Is it?
Can you get like dodgy stuff delivered?
Well, like organs.
Leftover lingerie,
I don't know, drugs.
But it opens, it's a serious, it kind of opens yourself up to quite a, I mean, who does the picking up? Is it individuals? Is it a company?
They've got a fleet of drivers. Okay, so they've screened them. They've trained them. So it's drivers, cyclists, motorbikers.
Right, because at the end of the day, you're lending someone into your house to come pick up, I don't know, your lunch or whatever it is. You don't want to just let anybody
like beef sandwiches. Absolutely.
I mean, are you mad? Not the sandwiches. The kids is fine. Just not the sandwich. And is there any kind of verification? I mean, like, do you know that this number plate is coming to your house, therefore allow them
in? Yes, absolutely. And you can even track your parcel the whole time. So you can see, oh, your bouquet of flowers is going to arrive at you in 5 minutes.
Okay,
or where they are and if they're at your house. So
I love the concept of, like, I mean, it's like your personal butler on speed dial.
Absolutely.
That's incredible.
Yeah.
Okay, very good find. All right, so we're looking forward to that being in Johannesburg. And there we go. That's our show. The time just flies when we're talking tech. Tanya, thank you again. Always a pleasure having you on the show.
Thank you for having me. I appreciate it.
Rian, thank you again. Love hearing your stories and the way that you use. Such a geek at heart, but he's one of those. I mean, if you ever meet him, he's huge. But he's a proper geek, very down to earth. And as I always say, if he ever phones you and say, hey, I have an idea, the answer is no. And then find out what he wants to say.
Don't ever go on a trip with Rian.
That's got to be scary stuff. Okay. All right. And that's our show. All wrapped up in a nice parcel. You can download all our podcasts on cliffcentral.com. We've got weeks and weeks of content for you to consume at your leisure. So whilst you're sitting in the car in traffic, don't swear and flick at the traffic. Just listen to cool technology. Thank you very much. See you next week.
Talking Tech with the Techie Guy, Elon Tech Give, on CliffCentral.com.